When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Williams has scored. That little chip through by Gareth Edwards really caught the Springbok defence by surprise. Williams got his boot as he chipped ahead, kicked it through, the bounce went his way, and JJ Williams has put the line.
Thanks, Dan Oden. This week's Attacking Scrum podcast. We've got absolutely stacks to get through this week. And I'm delighted to say that good friend of the show, Yestin George, will be joining us to do that. How are you doing, Yestin?
I'm doing great, thank you very much.
I was going to say, it's, an Ospreys win and a performance like that could only be dampened by Leeds getting hammered by Man United.
Oh, thanks for mentioning that, Jed. That's so kind of you, really. Yeah. Oh God. I mean, you know, that's classic Leeds, though. You know, smash the living daylights out of Newcastle and then get smashed, you know, 4 days later. Standard, really.
Oh well, there we go. That's going to be the only football mention on this podcast, apart from my usual meandering into confused sporting analogies. But I'll not be dwelling on that game any
Thank
further.
Thank you very much.
But the Ospreys, on the other hand, that was an absolute crackerjack of a performance. It's been a long time since I remember the Ospreys being in a game that exciting.
It is. There were about two instances where I thought, now is a good time to put on, maybe to start putting the Christmas decorations up. Perhaps I'm just going to go over here for a bit because it's getting a little bit painful and they may blow up and they may lose by a, you know, it could have been, there were moments in the game where you thought this could be a bit of a hammering after there were times when they were right in the game and then it felt like they were losing, you know, they could have lost by a comfortable margin. What an amazing performance. Absolutely fantastic. And on so many different fronts, we're not going to dwell massively on the Dragons' performance, I imagine, Jed.
Do you know what? Let's get this out of the way to start with. As expected, Dragon side with 16 players missing pitches up at Bordeaux, and you know the scoreline will tell you that we were absolutely hammered. And yes, in the end, we were. But God Almighty, that refereeing performance belonged in the Pro 14. It was that bad. It really was. I mean, the knock on for the first try. You just think that, like, how can you be looking at these things and miss that? Both the commentators picked it up. Scott Hastings on commentary picked it up, and he spent the whole game calling the winger Pat Lamb. So you know, if Scott's paying that much attention and he saw it, I just, I mean, I was flabbergasted by that, and I just think like. because by the time we'd made the inevitable mistakes at the start of the second half, it became then, it was painful to watch by the end of it. And full credit to that second string side for really not, you know, for not rolling over and letting it be 100 points. I know that sounds ridiculous, but there was lots of spirit in there. And, you know, things like the driving line out went well, scrum was good, you know, all things which I think actually they can take into the Boxing Day derby and stuff and feel like there is a bit of confidence around there, because that's, you know, really, okay, the scoreline will suggest it was a hammering, and it was. But it's not like we were pumped. We were pumped up front, and that was the reason. There was some very odd refereeing decisions, and yes, a better side ran away with it. But by the time that the injured and quarantined players are back in that side, I think there's definitely something there to build on. So I hope I'm not coming across like a Dragons apologist, but I think that you have got to say a side that doesn't belong in the Champions Cup, it's only there because of the weird glitch of South African teams playing in a Celtic league that they've ended up in there. I think have given a decent account of themselves in these two games. So, you know, I think that's what the feeling will be within the camp, to be honest, is, yeah, no one enjoys losing these games, but at the same time, you know, you've got to be realistic about a squad that's paper thin and put together on a much smaller budget than Bordeaux, and with 16 players out, you know, that was it for me, really.
Who do you think were the players that sort of made it, you know, who staked the claim Dragons wise, or who the players that you thought performed best?
That's a great question, actually. I think that Joe Davis put in another big shift in the second row, as he's done. You know, he's a completely unfussy player. And I think that has been, that's kind of been the key to these improvements, is now you've gone from having, second row has always been an area where he's been light, to having no standout names in there, but in Screech, Davis, Carter, and to a certain degree, Maximu, again, put a shift in. I hadn't been massively impressed with him until relatively recently, and I think he's starting to get into rhythm. You've now at least got four options of players who you know aren't going to get completely dominated. You know, that level of depth we don't have in the front row. That much is clear, and that's still accounting for a lot in the poorer performances. But yeah, I don't know if it was really one for standout individuals, to be honest. I'm just thinking back, you know, Rio Dyer is very exciting, but again, you know, he's raw as anything. And do you know what? I think Tavis Noel put in a big shift. And for a guy who's been injured for a lot of his career, particularly a lot of his Dragons career, it'd be very easy to look at him and think, you know, he wouldn't be interested in a game like that. But he was up for it. And I think, you know, these are players, you know, there's no other side in Europe that's looking at that Dragons side really and thinking there's a lot of these players who get in our team or even in our squads. And so actually to go out and put in that, you know, to put in a half decent performance, as I say, I probably am coming across like an apologist, but I think these last few games, there's definitely been something there to work with. And obviously Basham again, you know, he's a real live wire, and it does help cushion the blow of Ollie Griffiths being injured, having a player who can turn ball over seemingly at will.
Ollie Griffiths is going to be out for quite a while, it looks like, doesn't it?
It does. And if I'm honest, when he went off last week, I felt like that was, I don't know if it was just, again, the pessimist in me thinking this is going to be the end of his season or this is going to be him completely doomed. But to then hear people talking about, oh, well, he's not going to be available next week, I was expecting a lot worse. So yeah, he's going to be out for months, potentially back, you know, kind of around the start of the Six Nations time, which is likely to scupper his plans or, you know, certainly his opportunity of getting in that squad. But, you know, I'm just glad it's not a season ender, because he's been playing so well that I hope, yeah, you know, you never know. Maybe it'll be a quicker rehabilitation sign, but yeah, you don't want to be rushing him back. It's so frustrating that he is one of those players who's always injured, because when he plays, he's dynamite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, we have got some cracking questions that have come in as well. So big thank you to all listeners who sent those in. We've had some absolute joke questions as well. So I'll leave those ones there. But let's go on and talk about the Ospreys, Justin. This one is from Reese Knott. Are the Ospreys going to win the Challenge Cup?
Oh, come on. Really? As an opener? That's tough. Come on, Reese. You're better than that. I love Reese, actually. He's a polymath, isn't he? He's a sporting polymath, Reese is. I think it's a big ask. I really do. But they were... You know what I really liked yesterday was... Obviously, the fact that they didn't lie down and that they came back, but there were certain players that I just thought possibly came of age. And I know that that's always within 80 minutes is a bit of a big ask. But Reuben Morgan-Williams.
I thought he had a very good game, actually. Yeah, he did.
Really, really good, wasn't he?
He did. I think it was actually the control. As you know, I'm... This modern version of rugby with very regimented, architecturally sound caterpillar rucks and all this kind of stuff. I think, you know, we said before, it's not necessarily the area of the game I get most excited about. But I thought he controlled the game really well from nine, actually, and was actually able for all of that control and box kicking and things like that, was also able to zip the ball away. And when he got quick ball, was using it. And I think that was nice to see. Not just from a romantic point of view, but also in terms of the impetus that it gave in the game. I was very impressed with him. Probably the best game I've seen him have for the Ospreys, I think.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that he did get pinged, actually, by the, on the Welsh language commentary, lots of Gwyn Jones side-eye kind of comments about the referee. I thought he was quite... I know he was whistle-happy, but I thought he controlled the game really well. And he pinged more... You know, he pinged him for that caterpillar ruck where he was too slow getting the ball away.
Which I'd love to see more of.
I know. So I thought it was fair dues. And he was pinging people for, you know, for that kind of quick, at the breakdown, just going, nope, this isn't happening, you know, rather than letting it sort of... degenerate, and letting the game sort of, you know, fall into some sort of disarray. He tried to manage the game. Okay, you know, he was very live with the whistle. But I thought, but the thing was that Morgan Williams did actually then kind of, you know, adapt his game, and there was I think one or two dodgy kicks. But apart from that, I thought it was, you know, it was solid, and the Ospreys chasing wasn't great, but they were relatively solid. And as we saw, Worcester's backs were dangerous, particularly from first phase play. They looked really, really lively. And I also really liked, you know, Watkin going off. I thought, oh, here we go. And Tian Thomas Wheeler was another dark horse that I thought, God, he had a really, really good game in defence in particular. I know that Worcester cut through Ospreys on several occasions, particularly around the sort of 10-12 space. But I honestly thought Tian Thomas Wheeler was really, really good. So there were two players there definitely that I think came of age. And you just think the front row is so much firmer than it has been for, you know, bearing in mind that, you know, Nicky Smith is on the bench. They just looked really solid, and oh my God, a Welsh, you know, a really functional line threatening rolling maul from a line out. I mean, when has that happened in Welsh history? You know,
yeah, that was very impressive. And I think you touched on an interesting point there about the impact of the bench. Being able to bring on someone like Nicky Smith is massive, but Morgan Morris was, you know, potentially game winning in his, and again, I've always thought, oh, he's a really good, you know, prospect, he's great ball carrying, but his work over the ball was, you know, that's what won the game. If you win penalties like that, then you give yourself a chance, whatever situation the game's in, to bring someone off the bench who wins you crucial penalties in kickable areas. Bang, yeah. You've run off for more than that.
Well, he was the game winner, really. Three turnovers, penalties, and a try. end of story, man of the match. You know, I know George got it, but that was the performance that changed the nature of the game completely in the last 10 minutes. Amazing. And I mean, even I got that feeling that even he was surprised, you know, the third one in particular, everybody's gathering around him and he's doing this kind of like sort of raw kind of gesture, the scrum cap all lopsided. And you thought, actually, he's suddenly kind of going, I'm in charge of this game. You know, it was real. Let's grasp the whole game by the scruff of the neck. And there's not many, you know, it takes a very strong personality to do that. And
yeah, it does. And I think that's the encouraging thing, is you're seeing these players grow. And again, it's, you know, it's really important we don't get carried away here, like you say, that Ospreys are going to win the Challenge Cup. But what you want to see is that progression. And Toby Booth has been in charge now for a few months and it takes a while. And I think what you are seeing is those players who are prospects stepping up and saying, I can have a real impact on this team. You've seen George North. It was reinvigorated. Best game I've seen him have for a very long time. I also thought he was great. I can't remember who it was against, the game at St. Helens a few weeks back. Benetton, maybe. I thought he was good then. And actually, he did a really good job at 13 for Wales, I think. And it's all really encouraging. And he's the scapegoat not that I want to slag off, you know, the casual fan, but it's become fashionable to bash George North now, hasn't it? And I thought you really couldn't fault his efforts on Saturday. And that's all encouraging stuff. And even like you say, the bit where everyone's gathered around Morgan Morris as he wins those crucial turnovers, you can tell there's a hunger in that squad. And again, that has been missing for a while. I'm not saying that questioning the commitment of the players, but that extra few percent, and you can see how fired up they are. That's all the really encouraging stuff.
Yeah, and it seems to me that Sam Parry now has become a genuine leader. I sort of mentioned Lydiate last week, who was just outstanding, and again, you see him. And I think that this is where you go to Toby Booth and say, okay, you know, that's a hat tip to the coach, surely, because these are good players anyway, right? But there's something that makes them leaders in a team that is not massively different from the team that was playing 12 months ago, if not, you know, virtually identical. All of those players were there or thereabouts, apart from maybe Prothero and, you know, obviously Milo was late, but they were all around the squad. And you just see, I really think that Parry and Lydiate are absolutely key to it, allowing Tipperick to be Tipperick. You got players like Beard who seem to have sort of
resurgent Beard, isn't it? It looks more like the Beard of 2019 than the one we'd seen at the start of this year. And I think, again, looking at the Welsh side, and obviously we're going to talk about this in the months to come, but it's an area where we'd really struggled, and not just the line out, but just general clearing out and grunts that you get from a player like Beard. It's really encouraging to see him coming back, because he's, you know, he's a young player. He must have, what, 25 caps for Wales already, but he's a young guy and will have a lot more to give. So I think it's encouraging to see what Toby Booth's been able to get out of him and all those other players in the squad.
And when you see the way that the lineout operates, it was flawless last night. And that was, you know, it got tricky when the rain started. After half time, it was going to be a kick. It was going to be a messy game. Obviously, the being on an artificial pitch helps to a certain degree. Maybe you don't descend to the levels that you would do if you were on the Liberty. But Tipperick in the lineout, everything was secure. It allowed them to develop rolling balls, you know, and score from them, but also just be, you know, if you have that discipline from that set piece, if you've got a scrum that holds its own, and it just takes so much stress out of the game. And that's something the Ospreys, you know, haven't been able to do now for maybe two or three seasons even. And it was just, you know, there were a couple of overthrows, and apart from that, it was solid. And I thought, that's what then allows teams to drag themselves back from an 11-point deficit and just chip away. And it always looked like it was going to be try, but, you know, whenever Ospreay scored, you always thought, well, Worcester are going to come back with another try. You know, it was never going to be it was never going to be that one-sided, but it still felt like Ospreys, even though there was no real overall control of the game until the last 10 minutes, it just felt like they were always in the game and that they weren't chasing it and they weren't throwing miracle passes. And apart from, did you see the look that Venta gave Kieran Williams when he threw the ball into touch? Venta, yeah,
it was absolutely filthy, wasn't it?
It was the filth, and I thought that was great because Venta's on the wing. You know, they had two back substitutes. 6-2 split. That was weird, wasn't it?
It was weird. But also, I think there was another incident. I can't remember who it might be. Kieran Williams again, but there was a hideous pass that Prothero got at some point, I think in the first half. And again, he was annoyed about it, but you can tell annoyed in a way like when a slip fielder drops a Stuart Broad nick. You know, it's annoying, but it's because the standards are high. It's not not people narking with one another. It's, you've got to be better than this. And again, I think that was, we spoke a lot in the autumn about how poor Wales's body language was against Ireland.
Yeah.
And I feel like the body language and the expression, the way players are interacting with one another is, come on, you know, you're better than this. We've got this. And I think there was a lot of that kind of positive stuff to take out of the game.
Yeah, there was. And also when Kieran Williams ran into Dupree and got smashed and walked away kind of sort of smiling quietly to himself, knowing he just made a very bad decision to run into the biggest guy in Worcester's defence. You know, that as well was a bit, that was quite heartening. It was just like a kind of a team that was kind of comfortable within its own skin. And, you know, God almighty, how many times have we heard this about the Ospreys' identity? And I still fight the, you know, ultimately I'll always, always kind of go, there is no identity. There is no such thing as Australia, for crying out loud. Let's get over this. But from a squad point of view and from a pragmatic point of view and from a squad, you know, from a performance point of view, that was a performance of a team that was more coherent than I've seen it. I still think they got tons to do in terms of their attacking prowess, but they're definitely heading in the right direction. That was not a performance that was based on, it was just a one-off performance. Like, as I said to you last week, that it felt like something, they turned a corner after Edinburgh and then they just kind of went back to bad old Ospreys the week after that. And this just feels like it's not a momentum shift, but it is definitely a builder. It feels like they were heading in the right direction. Whether that means that they're going to win, I very much doubt it, to be honest. I think there are too many good teams in that competition. But just be happy with the fact that these players are performing to their capabilities and to their potential, and that's really good. And if you can bring Nicky Smith off the bench, or you bring Cracknell off the bench, or you bring Morgan Morris off the bench, you know, you've got that, that's going to make a big difference, you know, for the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, so it's all encouraging. I think it's a long ask to say that they're going to win it, but it's, as much as anything, I think we said this last week, getting out of the group and playing knockout rugby is positive for so many reasons. One, if you are able eventually to have crowds, obviously that's looking a lot less likely given the week's worth of news, but it's positive from that point of view in terms of just giving the fan base, whether they're there or not, something to look forward to. But also, again, in terms of testing young players' mentality, you know, it's such a good run out for them because it does test that top inch. Is, are we able to grind out results in big games? And, you know, it's great beating Worcester away in the in the pool stages, but to be able to do something and knock out again, I think that's the opportunity that gives players a big chance to grow. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good. And while we're talking about crowds, actually, we've had this one in from Ian Phillips, which I think is a great point. Has the introduction of small crowds at English venues made a big difference in terms of atmosphere? I'd have to say, based on yesterday, yes. I think it really helped having even just a small amount of fans. Again, really weird, set against the backdrop of England going into further lockdown just a few hours later, to have a load of people at a rugby match. It did feel a tad odd to start with, but it is just so much better, isn't it? You'll never be able to feel genuine atmosphere with fake noise.
No, and I think it was notable in games like the Gloucester game, for instance, where they stole it at the last. I'm not entirely convinced that, you know, Gloucester have got a reputation for doing that, but I don't think they would have done it without 2,000 fans in the stadium. So you could say that sort of last minute comeback, that kind of keep going until, you know, with a crowd like in a ground like in Gloucester where the fans are so wholehearted about it, I think that does make a difference. Yeah, without a doubt.
And I think as well, as from a spectacle, a game like that deserved to have some fans there, and it definitely made it better watching on the pitch. I might have been a bit more acutely aware of it because I was watching with the Welsh language commentary on, and I don't speak Welsh, but it was I think being able to sense that the crowd were there as well. It definitely added to the overall experience. So
it's quite weird when they switch the lights off when somebody scores.
I thought
they've had a power cut.
I thought back to Selhurst. Was it Selhurst Park in about the 90s, and Upton Park had one as well. I didn't think that was going to happen.
It's not obviously there's some sort of pyrotechnics going on in the ground, but it just looks like they've lost the lights. Yeah,
I know. I definitely had that thought when the first one happened. But I don't know. It was slightly odd, but there we go. We still got lots more to talk about, even though two games were called off. And we're definitely going to touch upon those talking points as well. We're going to have a quick look ahead in the second half to the Christmas derbies, talking of crowds, it's just it's that one time of the year, isn't it, when you get really excited. And obviously it's going to be very different this year, not having crowds packed into the regional stadiums. But anyway, we're still going to go ahead and preview those in the second half of the show. But first, we're going to take this very quick break. Right, Justin, before we get into some more of these listener questions, I just want to finish with this part on the Ospreys. Has Dan Evans bulked up? He looked like he was carrying like a number eight, but still had that sidestep and still had the kicking game. That was great to see again, just seeing, not that he's really been missing, but just how important Dan Evans can be in these games. He looked like he bulked up to me.
Yeah, and he is, you know, he was determined to, when he carried the ball really well, didn't he? And I think that's one of the things that's really hard when you're playing this slightly ridiculous kick tennis game that we're currently enduring, is when a player goes, okay, enough of that, I'm going to go. Dan Evans is probably the one fullback in regional rugby that you just think, okay, you're choosing, you know, you've chosen your moment. And he really does his very best, doesn't he, to break the line and run. You know, he's always been an amazing player at picking great lines. And he didn't do very much of that in terms of coming into the back line, but when he was carrying kicks back and also supporting George North as well, which was a key thing. I thought it's one thing for George North to break the first tackle and to make a big difference, which he did, you know, three times with absolute, with a significant impact on the outcome of the game. But to have players on your shoulder and for them to be players like, you know, Kieran Williams or Dan Evans and, the, you know, smart players who know what to do with it. I thought that was really important.
Yeah, no, I'd absolutely agree with all of those points you've made there. And it's, yeah, it is good to see him playing like that. I thought the other thing that was encouraging was some of those offloads that were getting thrown. Again, I think that comes with confidence. You know, watching North flick the ball out of at the back of his right hand, and then I can't remember who it was to, and then instantly straight back in, and them sticking as well. You know, I think that's definitely something that that will please the coaching staff, because it is the kind of thing that you can only get when you're training right, and when you've got a good understanding of where those players are going to be. Because when you try it and it's out of hope, you know, that's where the game of kick tennis gets justified again, doesn't it? Because you just think, right, we'll play the game in the right areas and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's definitely encouraging in that regard.
Well, it goes back to that, the, you know, Williams past Venter, you know, the fact that he was so outraged by it, again, as you said earlier, suggests that they are expecting a lot more than that out of players playing. And if you can really utilize those wide spaces, that's the only area of the pitch where you're actually going to get some joy, isn't it? I mean, that's been proven for seasons, and, you know, since the Scarlets were doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's move on and talk about the Scarlets now, because we did have two other victories for Welsh sides this weekend, at least on paper anyway. So with the games in Cardiff and Llanelli called off, 28-0 victories for both the Scarlets and the Cardiff Blues. We've had this question in from Lewis Davis. Were Toulon justified in calling off their game against the Scarlets at the 11th hour? Or does their behaviour show a lack of respect for the tournament and EPRC, ERPC? I can never remember which way that is. The governing body.
It probably does show what their priorities are in terms of the competition, I imagine. Otherwise, they would have played the game. But then, much as it was a big shock at the time, then it was less than 24 hours later that everybody was going, oh, okay, so now we have a particularly virulent strain of COVID doing the rounds, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I wouldn't say it was visionary by Toulon, but it does indicate that they're just looking and going, this is not, you know, I teach it at a university, and a lot of my students are from, not many, but some of them are from abroad, and they're all kind of keep on saying, yeah, well, it's okay in Egypt or in Sweden or in, you know, we have to remember that we are actually at the heart of this whole situation. So, you know, we might sit back and go, oh, well, you know, the French have just bottled it, or they've made a compromised decision because they don't care about the competition. But the fundamental truth of the matter is we are actually in a worse situation than most countries. So,
yeah.
You know, coming to play in Wales or coming to play in England is a dangerous game for a team that is from another country. It doesn't strike you as the fact that they had to go and pick their kit up from you know, Parc des Scarlets before going home again, you know, that they were there, but not there, as it were. You know, you just have to remember, you have to have a sense of perspective about what our situation is as compared to other countries.
Are the organisers right then to treat it as a straightforward forfeit of the game and a 28-0? Or do you even have any option in that scenario?
I don't think you have any option, because they just, you know, from an administrative point of view, they've got nothing to go with, have they? They're just thinking about running the competition. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about the ethical implications of it. Imagine that. Let's have a deep, meaningful discussion about the ethical implications of this scenario. I don't think have World Rugby ever had a conversation like that, do you think?
No, I'm not sure they have. So yeah, I mean,
it must have been tamping though about the TV and stuff, don't you think?
Yeah,
they must have been livid.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would be, I think, particularly because it's a Champions Cup game rather than a Challenge Cup game, which, you know, as has been my gripe for many years, the Challenge Cup has, you know, until this season and a little bit of last season, had kind of vanished from view completely. But yeah, with the Challenge Cup, obviously it's not like that. And again, you know, a game like that, if it had been a Dragons game, it wouldn't have mattered so much because it was buried away on BT Sport 5 or something. But yeah, you're right. Again, there'll be some kind of rebate financially. It's a massive kick in the pants for them. So yeah, it's not good news. Interesting though, I don't know if you spotted, and I've yet to do the maths on it, but the English Premiership have redone the deal with BT Sport, which was looking somewhat shaky earlier in the week. And, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting story. And once I've had an opportunity to do a proper bit of analysis on it, I think that these TV broadcast deals are so crucial now where clubs are. Well, they were crucial anyway, but the year that all clubs in Europe have been through, they're increasingly so. And it's going to be really, really fascinating to see how the next round for the pro, whatever we're in by then, the pro 16 or whatever it might be, how that rolls around. I can't see Premier Sports sticking with it. I can't imagine that being the case. I think what I find interesting about this Premiership one is if CVC wanted returns on the investment that they made some 2 years ago, the headline numbers doesn't suggest that this is providing it. This feels like a bridging deal almost. And again, I don't know if this is just the fantasist in me thinking, right, the next deal is going to be something a bit bigger or a bit more reformed, i.e. you've either got a big player like an Amazon coming in and putting money in, as I'm sure Premiership Rugby or the clubs themselves would want, or you're going to be having some kind of rejigs composition that might well warrant a bigger investment from a broadcaster. But it's I did find that one quite interesting because it's been an ongoing the sword of Damocles hanging over Premiership Rugby, I'd say.
How long is this deal for? The one
I think it's a 3 year. I'm gonna quickly Google that while I'm babbling away.
Every time you talk about Amazon, because of obviously watching the football and being able to access, you know, five games at any given point, because yeah, Amazon can just kind of create channels for you to watch, you know, so infinite bandwidth, basically infinite coverage. It does. Every time you mention Amazon, it sounds very tempting because you just think of like wall-to-wall rugby, which is like possibly not everybody's cup of tea, but it does make for a more compelling kind of package, really, if you think that they're going to be able to show everything. But yeah, was the whole point of Premier the fact that they would get into the market and then get bought out? Was that the point in a kind of Setantari sort of?
I think, well, it is a company that essentially is the same as Setanta. I think ownership wise, it's the same kind of Luxembourg-based Irish investors, I think. And so Premier Sports is, Ireland was the big play here, I think. I think I'm right in saying that, or certainly, you know, an Irish expat market. And I just think you can see kind of where they've brought production back in-house, because I think they were using a big production house like Sunset and Vine, who do, you know, BT's football coverage, and obviously did Channel 4's cricket coverage back in the day, which is where we all remember it from. And I think they re-bought that in a few months before COVID, which just makes you think if they're trying to cut costs that perhaps Jiffy was right all along and no one's watching. And I think that is the case. And they might have been able to make some subscribers work, but it's certainly not working in terms of growing the game. So I don't know. I might be wrong. If I'm honest, I didn't really necessarily see this BT Sport one working again, but it feels like they've got to a position where they've kind of just rolled over the same deal for the next 3 years. I think on the website, I've just had a look, they're saying it's for the next 4 years, so 2024, but obviously the season's underway anyway. So I think that's the next three seasons. So, I mean, it will give some degree of security. But it's I don't know. I'm intrigued to see what will happen with the what is looking well, what was looking increasingly like the Pro 16. But again, you just wonder, like, is there really a chance of South African sides playing in this tournament again next year? Are we going to get a Lions tour to South Africa? None of that feels particularly likely at the moment.
No, it feels like we're looking at, you know, May, June next year before anybody can make any decisions. Hmm. It feels that if you know, people create websites where you type in your health condition and they tell you when you're going to get your vaccine, and if it's going to be May or June next year, then, you know, and that's just obviously, that's absolutely not based on any kind of medical evidence whatsoever, but somebody just being smart and creating an app or creating a website. But if it is anything like that, then you are talking about next summer at the earliest. I mean, I certainly am not thinking about, you know, doing a lot in terms of, you know, in terms of my work until May, you know. I just think it's going to be game over until then. So I can't imagine that broadcasters are going to be able to look, or certainly fans and organizations, you know, imagine trying to get fans over to South Africa, you know, running Gulliver's travel trips with all that kind of stuff, as well as just the logistics of playing. I mean, without a doubt, the cricket in the last 2 weeks has been very instructive, isn't it? The way that England managed to conduct, you know, two series in a bubble, and then everything just fell apart as soon as they started, you know.
I mean, again,
not a good sign.
We'd need a complete different podcast series if we were going to go into the organizational failings of South African cricket, but
yeah
maybe another one for another day, that one. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how those things go. Let's just pick this is a nice one from Robert Giannotti. Sends us in a question most weeks, actually, and this is a nice one to mull over. Which player would be the perfect Christmas present for each of the four regions? And I always enjoy these kind of questions on lighthearted podcasts. I enjoy it less at COVID briefing sessions, as it seems to be creeping in there. But seeing as we fall into the former of those brackets, let's start with Cardiff, because we've not really spoken about them. Which player, if you could name any player, and I'm gonna let you, no parameters on this whatsoever. It could even be a player from the past, if you like.
It feels like they need Nick Williams.
There's
a lot of good stuff going on there, without a doubt. I think this sort of notional idea of John Mulvihill's on the Last Chance Saloon and all that kind of stuff seems a little bit, I know that, you know, I'm not a Blues fan, so I guess their level of expectation is higher perhaps, but I think that's a bit harsh, to be honest, with what he's dealt with, you know, and the fact that he's had the injury issues that they've had as well. It's not insignificant, but I'd love to see, I think I'd also in heart Lee Halfpenny.
Well, yeah, I don't think your friends on the other side of the Lucca would be particularly appreciative of Halfpenny moving back to Cardiff Blues. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of any side that isn't improved by Lee Halfpenny. As again, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, we were saying how good a signing he has been for the Scarlets because of his all round game. He's just brilliant in defence and such a great kicker out of hand and at goal. He's just a real great of the game. But yeah, he would look very good at Cardiff. You know, I think he'd do an excellent job there. For me, I can't quite figure out what it is that's going wrong there, because, you know, as we say, going wrong, you know, they beat Newcastle the other week, but I felt like they put in some really good performances while the internationals were away, but dropped off in a lot of those games that I felt were winnable. And I kind of felt a lot of players like Murphy had really stepped up and again looked like someone who can add some real grunt when Davis and Hill are away. And I don't know whether it's just general overall depth or or fitness or whatever it is. But I personally think they need cover for Jared Evans. I think they're so reliant on Jared Evans and he's brilliant. But I actually think I'm going to sit here with a sensible hat on and say that they need a, who would be a good functional second string 10 for Cardiff. That's what they need for Christmas. Because yeah, I think Tovey struggled when he's come off the bench in those games.
Yeah, I mean, Tovey's put in occasional man of the match performances, but not as you and I both looking at each other now would ever say is in keeping with what our romantic ideal of what an outside half is.
I mean, surely he's due like his eighth spell at the Dragons soon. I think Jason Tovey he doesn't go many seasons without coming back to the Dragons. But
I've got a massive. My frustration is the fact that the Scarlets have a surfeit of tens, and even without Rhys Patchell, I think that they've got too many of them, and I would be loaning Angus O'Brien or Sam Costello out to the Blues. But I know that that's not the player that you want. You want somebody more a more solid 10 I mean, if Dan Biggar was playing for the Blues, that would be something else.
I tell you who would be a player for them, and this isn't me being hipster about it. It's only because I saw him come off the bench for Bordeaux at the weekend. But Ben Botica came on and did a good job. I mean, again, against this Dragon side that had fallen to shreds at this point. But he's that kind of player, a perennial number 22. I don't ever really remember him starting for anyone. I think Harlequins, he was, you know, he's always kind of coming on for Nick Evans, and I think he'd be the kind of player who would be a very good addition to a.
I thought you were going to say Danny Cipriani for a minute then.
Well, I think we all know he's heading to Rodney Parade, so yeah, it's not even heading to Rodney Parade to sit on the bench for the Dragons.
Yeah, excellent.
All right, what about the Dragons then? Any player you think would be a good fit down there? I mean, it's a grizzled, gnarly, a pair of props, ideally, but yeah. It's someone like a Dimitri Ahip is what you need at the Dragons. You know, a complete brute. Just a real bastard of a tight head. Someone who, you know, with a face only a mother could love. You know, I think is really what's needed. Just a real specialist
who then can also, you know, can also take Leon Brown under their wing and then teach them everything they know. Yeah, that's a good shout, actually. That sort of idea of I can't think. I mean, because you know they're not. You don't think, oh, they need wingers, because they don't need wingers. No. You don't think they need, again. You know, they have everything. Squad wise, they've got what they need. I mean, if anything, you know, they have more than they need. More than you're used to seeing the Dragons have. Then, certainly in the backs.
I think it's again. It's a similar story to Cardiff, though. We're so reliant on Sam Davis, and he has. You know, he's been a really, really good signing, but. Again, you're asking him to play virtually every game this year. He would have played again yesterday had he not have to drop out on the day. So that's. But I mean, where do you find tens that are? And obviously, luckily, this is a fantasy. This is a fantasy game because, you know, where do you find a 10 who's got experience is good enough to come and sit on the bench? And that's proven the problem, isn't it? But
it's why Stephen Myler's playing at the Ospreys, isn't it?
It is, but
because
also,
there aren't. There's a generation of up and comings, but there isn't a generation of people who are kind of towards the twilight of their careers, as it were.
But yeah, frustratingly, again, moving a bit further west down the M4, and you've got, like you say, Angus O'Brien, third or fourth choice at the Scarlets, and the decision by the Dragons to let him go was a really foolish one. It just, you know, I know he can be a little bit erratic, but you're telling me he's not good enough to be a Dragons squad 10. Come on, not having that. It's tens are what they need.
Well, I keep on saying about this, about Costello, because I just think that this thing about under 20s, if, you know, you look at Jack Morgan being given the opportunity at the Scarlets to make a claim, and doing so, there are, you know, let's not over romanticize that the leap from under 20s into regional rugby is even difficult in the Pro 14,
but it is. We spoke to Harry Keddy a few years ago about it, and Harry was the standout player in that under 20 side that won the Slam. As you know, it's a big ball carrying eight, and he's essentially had to reinvent himself over those 4 years. As you know, he's still a good ball carrier, but it's not an explosive ball carrier. You know, he does a lot of grunt work, and he's a good all-rounder, really, is what he is. And he's been very important to the Dragons this year. But it's that step up, you know, physicality-wise, it's huge. But, yeah, Morgan has done a really good job at making that step up. And it's a real shame to see he's picked up an injury as well.
Yeah, it just needs that there are a load of players who are never going to get game time. So how can you be, Harry Keddy had injury problems right almost from the get-go, didn't he? He's had seasons, best part of a season out, and he's had several injuries. And you just think, you've got to play these, you know, you've got to play the brightest sparks from the 20s in the next seat. They've got to go up the next season. You can't leave. I just don't buy this. You know, give them two seasons training with the
first. No, you can't. It's match fitness that you need. The problem is that if you can't make that step up, I don't think the Welsh Premiership is going to do that. Is going to fill that gap for you. That's the problem that you've got. And again, perhaps in future time there'll be more A game fixtures played by the regions, but. Yeah, you're right. These players do need a lot of time. And talking of time, we are running out of it quite quickly. But let's have a look then. So we've done Cardiff and the Dragons there. Ospreys, you'd probably say the same thing, right? It's another 10 needed.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's without a doubt. It's crying out for, because Milo is playing every game and every. Pretty much every minute of every game as it is, and he's got two very raw players underneath him, and it's a big ask and the rest of the squad seems, the back row seems fine, the second row they've managed to find additional players to make the starting 15, which is great. The front row seems okay, better than okay actually. Yeah, I wouldn't complain about, I wouldn't.
Maybe Callum Sheedy would be a good addition. I'm not sure how long he's got on his Bristol contract, but nice. At some point in time he's going to have to come back to Wales, and yeah, that would be a good place to head potentially. But yeah, one thing the Scarlets don't need is any more tens. They got pretty good depth across the board there, really. Certainly, obviously, got two international nines. They've got loads of tens. And I still think centre might be one. You know, I know obviously there's been a good addition in terms of Johnny Williams coming in there. Yeah. But then you've got, I still wonder whether, essentially a second version of Hadley Parks would be what the Scarlets might want. Just a good, robust centre who can slot in to 12 or 13 fairly comfortably, good defensively, happy to smash the ball into contact, but also got a bit of footballing skill. Basically, your archetypal New Zealand provincial centre.
Yeah, because Steph Hughes plays there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
When Tyler's playing outside him, or when, you know, he's not. And that's quite a tough ask as well, isn't it? What about front row? Do you think, I mean, obviously okay hooker in terms of hookers, but do you think there's anything? I don't know.
I mean, I think all the probably all of the squads could benefit from an international, you know, a French international prop with 40-odd caps.
Exactly that. I was just going to say the same.
But they tend to command £500,000 a year, I think.
Yeah, New Zealand prop, recently retired from international rugby, 32 years old, got three years left in the tank.
Yeah, you want a kind of moody someone like that coming over into the side. That'd almost be a complete star signing, wouldn't it? Right, we've got a couple of minutes left. Let's have a quick look ahead to the to the Christmas Derby. So first up on Boxing Day, we've got the, I guess the, those traditional, as traditional as they get fixtures. So you've got Dragons at home to Cardiff Blues and Ospreys in theory at home to Scarlets, providing they can sort something out with the pitch. How do you see those two panning out?
I see the Dragons Blues game as a 50-50. Really, is whoever wants it the most on the day. I don't think it's very even. Blues have got the better, you know, they potentially have the better performance in them, but the Dragon squad is strong enough to compete. If they can get everybody on the pitch, then I think they have every chance of winning that. And I'd say that the same thing, you know, you just obviously, now that the Ospreys are really brilliant and are going to win everything inside after back-to-back performances, the Ospreys are going to never lose again. But you just think that they have, I wouldn't be surprised, even though obviously we're only a week away from just marveling at the Scarlets' performance in Bath. So, you know, forget about that, right? Forget about that. I still think Ospreys have every opportunity of nicking that. What about you?
I think that I have a sneaking suspicion Dragons are going to get close here. I think if we can get, again, as you say, get everyone back fit and in the side. Obviously, yeah, Ollie Griffiths will be missing. But if you can get a side that has Ashton Hewitt back in it, that has, choice of those second rows you mentioned earlier, you're able to, you know, bring Leon Brown off the bench or something like that to make an impact. And then, yeah, you drop back in either Keddie or Wainwright into that back row alongside Basham. That then starts to feel like you've got a really good chance of taking Cardiff on. But again, likewise, they'll have, you know, they've, as we saw last week, Corey Hill makes a big difference to them. They've got both the Williamses at nine. So I think that could be a really close game. But I do think that the Dragons have got a good chance of doing that. And confidence will be, I know we've had back-to-back losses, but they're essentially midweek teams. You know, they've been the dirt trackers out there. And so I think, yeah, if we can get a fully or as close to full strength side out, I think we've got a good chance. I think Scarlets would probably still be favourites just for the West Wales derby. I was really impressed. I just wonder whether they might benefit from having a week off, because in a season where there's going to be more rugby than ever, I think that actually I think the Dragons benefited from having a couple of games postponed due to COVID, because they came back and were able to concentrate on training and, you know, had a few games without massive impact. So a few weeks rather without massive impact. So I do think the Scarlets might just edge that. So I'm going Dragons and Scarlets to win those ones. But do you know what, as much as anything, I just think two really full-blooded, cliche-driven, no love lost, but ideally close games would be really good for spiking some interest for the rest of the season. I think that would be ideal.
No, agreed.
Great stuff. Well, a couple of quick thanks to finish with. Thanks to everyone who's been listening, of course. Particular thanks to this fantastic iTunes review we had this week, which is from someone called Bubble Beyond, who says, "I like this pod, but one of the guys sounds like he's constantly distracted in a way that's akin to the guy from The Vicar of Dibley." So I don't know whether that's directed at me or Killick, but seeing as Dan can't be asked to turn up for non-internationals, we're going to say that that's Dan. But that one certainly made me chuckle. And he still gave us 4 stars anyway, so that's good. So if you think we can manage better than 4 stars, then please leave us a review on iTunes. Big thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. Again, you'll probably be too late for Christmas now, but you can get some great quality coffee on there if you head over to socoffeetrades.co.uk. And a big thanks to you, Yestin, for joining us once again.
No, thanks very much, Jed. Let's hope for more exciting times ahead.
Fingers crossed. Well, either way, we'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.